Everybody. The pasuk at the end of Rishon says the following in Parshas Shlach: Umah ha'aretz. Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Meraglim, "I want you to go to Eretz Yisrael and I want you to check out the land." And he says, "Tell me what the land is like. Hashmenahi, is it a good land that grows great fruits? Imraza, or is it a thin land that doesn't grow good fruit?" Hayesh ba'etz, are there trees there? Im ayin, or are there no trees there? V'yischazaktem, I want you to be strong. U'lekachtem mipri aretz, take from the fruit of the ground. V'ayamim maybe kuri anavim. And all those days at the time, were the days of the ripening of those grapes. It's just a strange line. So first, we're going to talk about four different parts of this pasuk. Why was Moshe Rabbeinu talking about trees? Why did he ask them if there were trees in the ground? Targum Yonason says he wanted to see, were there fruit trees in Eretz Yisrael? How many fruit trees were there in Eretz Yisrael? And that's what Sforno says as well. What kind of fruit trees they were. Look out for the Sheva Minim, those seven different types, etc., and stuff like that. But that's so strange. Obviously, there are fruit trees. At the end of the pasuk, it says, those days were the days of the Bikurei Anavim, and he asks them to take fruit from the ground. So what's he asking if there were fruit trees for? It's just a strange question to ask. If there were multiple fruit trees, if there were numerous fruit trees, I get it, but it's just a strange question altogether. The Malbim says they weren't just looking for fruit trees. They were asking, Im Ayin, are there non-fruit-bearing trees as well? And the reason why that's important is because they wanted thick, sturdy wood. I mean, we're talking about something building up the land of Eretz Yisrael, and they were going to live there as well. They wanted to build houses. They didn't just want to know about fruit trees of what they were going to eat. They want to know what kind of trees are there. Can they build off them? Are there oak trees? Are there pine trees? Are there other trees that you can use for building? So this is what he meant by Im Ayin. I'm not asking if there are fruit trees or not. Are there fruit trees or are there not fruit-bearing trees, meaning other trees that are like it? I want to know everything what's going on with it. Remember, they were coming from Egypt. Back in Egypt, they didn't have this stuff. There wasn't any of this stuff. The land was either desert land and all sand with disgusting stuff or extremely wet. There are no good trees growing in that part of Egypt. They weren't used to having that. Everything they made out of was made out of clay or brick, something like that, and they formed it from there. But that's that. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted them to see what kind of land this was. Is it orchards like Egypt, or is it going to be made with firewood and sturdy trees that they could build off of so that they would go into it knowing here's what we're going to be able to build with? That's the shot idea by the Malbim, the Sforno, the Targum Yonason in that way. Panach Raza says, obviously every country has trees. It's not like this country doesn't have anything whatsoever. But the idea is how strong are these trees for battle? If we go in and they have these huge battering rams and they're able to make these axes with sturdy wood, then they're going to be a formidable enemy. Now, granted, again, we have a Kadosh Baruch Hu on our side. I'm not worried about that. But regardless, what are we going into? I want to see what we're going into, heading into. So not just for building, but simply put, army-wise, what kind of wood are we dealing with? What kind of strength do these people have? The Or HaChaim HaKadosh said, it's really about seeing what's missing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us that it was a land that had everything. So look around. Is every tree type represented in Eretz Yisrael? Since Eretz Yisrael is filled with land that is all over the place, like some types, you have desert in Eretz Yisrael, you have grasslands in Eretz Yisrael, right across the street from one another, literally on the highway with the Dead Sea on one side, you have Ein Gedi on the other. What kind of trees make up Eretz Yisrael? And is it really what they say it is, where there's everything all over the place with a cacti on one side and these other types of trees on the other? What kind of land is it exactly? The Or HaChaim HaKadosh says that's the idea. But Rashi takes this completely off the reservation. This has nothing to do with trees. And eights, and what Moshe Rabbeinu is asking for, is are there Adam Kisherim, good people that live in Eretz Yisrael? Who is living there right now? An eitz is somebody who's going to protect the entire generation. Now, what is an adam kasher by a non-Jew? Obviously, by a Jewish person, you assume a great person is someone who keeps the Torah and does all the laws, etc., and that will be an adam kasher that can protect the people. But by a non-Jew, what is an adam kasher? How do you define it? Ayala Sashachar Rav Aron Leib Shteinman Zatzel said it's someone who keeps the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, obviously regarding the big three, Gilui Arayos, Shfichus Dam, Avodah Zarah, not murdering, not committing adultery, not being involved with Avodah Zarah, and then the four, not being cruel to animals, not cursing out God's name, not stealing, and setting up court systems. People that are good people, if you keep those, says El Shachar, that's an overall person. And the crazy part is that although we need to keep 613 mitzvos in order to protect our generation, by a non-Jew, you don't need that many. Seven is good enough. And maybe it means, I don't think that means that we're not going to be able to conquer Eretz Yisrael, but it's going to take a while. There are going to be people that are left in there because there's this protection there. There's an Adam Kasher that protects it in there. Similar to what happened with the Yavusi and Eretz Yisrael in Yerushalayim. They stayed in Yerushalayim for a long time because there were Adam Ksherim living there. There were good people living there, and this kept happening. Pardes Yosef says this drush of Rashi, calling it an eitz as an Adam Kasher, is from the anomalies in the pasuk. There's two anomalies. Number one, it does not say yesh ba eitzim im ayin, which would be the plural of trees. It says yesh ba eitz. Is there a tree? So it seems like we're specifically referring to something that would be compared to a tree. That's the first part. The second part is that it seems that Moshe Rabbeinu knew, as we said before, he knew there were fruits there. He wouldn't be asking about fruit trees. That makes no sense. Why would he care about the fruit trees there? That's how the Pardes Yosef. Rashi and Kohelas says the exact same thing. In Kohelas, Yud Aleph Gimel, he says that a tree protects others in its shade, and that's the idea. Why are Talmidei Chachamim compared to trees? Why would you say, here's a Talmid Chacham, here's what we're going to compare it to, we're going to compare it to a tree? There are other comparisons, I think, that you can make here. Tree is one of them, certainly it's one of them, but there's so many other things that you could possibly compare a tzaddik to. Why specifically this? So here's the idea. Everyone brings down the Pasuk in Devarim, and it says in Perichav Pasuk Yates, Ki Adam Eitz Hasadehu. A man is like the tree of the field. There is a tree of the field and there's a connection between us. Everybody knows the Gemara, Tzadik Katamar Yifrach. A tzadik, like a palm tree, sprouts out flowers with everything you can think of. That's what a tzadik is like. That's also a Gemara in Tainus Chafayim Abayz. In Tainus Hayim Abayz, we're clearly compared to trees with the famous song, Ilan, Ilan, Bama Varechacha. How can I bless you, O trees? It's the same thing with a human being. How do I bless the people that are such good people? And it goes on in Zayin Amud Aleph, a Rebbe is like a tree in how he gives over to his Talmidim. The Sefer Yeshuas Chachma says, Gilgulei Neshamos, people in their Gilgulim are often brought back as trees. Not completely, we don't believe in reincarnation. We believe in the concept of what Gilgulim are, which is a different type of concept, where your Neshama can be connected to something else. But there's a connection between human beings and trees. It's actual trees, and that's brought down by that Sefer Yeshuas Chachma from other places. I'm sorry?
Like in the ranking of Gilgulim, is that like better or worse?
I can't tell
you
ranking. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, you can come back as a rabbit.
I've got a year. I've got a year and 5 months, okay? Come back to me in a year and 5 months. I might tell you, I might not, but in a year and 5 months, I'll be able to tell you. Until that point, I've got nothing. Like that night, I'll be able to tell you. Rav Wolfson goes ahead and suggests that eight stands for ayin tzaddik, that the true way to be a tzaddik is to protect your eyes. And I know that sounds strange in a way, but it's so obvious. Many, many tzaddikim are people that have stayed away from arayas, people that have stayed away from illicit thoughts, illicit relationships, things like that. Eitz means ayin tzaddik. If the tzaddik doesn't look at things that are improper, that creates a tzaddik, that makes a person into a tzaddik. That's the idea of what it stands for, and that's what's going on over here as well. That's the Shmir Zayin that creates that. Now, granted, this is a tree. This is the beginning of what it means by eitz itself. That's one. But there's more to it. In Baba Basra, it's in Dav Tesvav. We say that this eitz, the tree in Eretz Yisrael that Moshe Rabbeinu was asking about, was referring to Eov. Is Eov alive? He wasn't asking about anyone else. He wasn't asking about random tzaddikim. He's asking, is Eov alive or dead? What's going on with Eov? The tree of all of the non-Jews of the world, the one that everybody looks up to, is Eov specifically. He lived for 205 years. His years were as long as a tree lives. Trees live for a long time. So too Eov lived for a very, very long time. Rashi doesn't mention Eov. Perhaps he means that it could be absolutely anyone. But Birchas HaParetz brings down a gematria, as Rav Chaim Knievsky, that brings down a gematria. I've never heard this gematria, but just hear this gematria. He brings down Hayesh Ba Eitz Im Ayin V'His Chazaktem. All those words, Hayesh Ba Eitz Im Ayin V'His Chazaktem, is 1,550, the same as Hayesh Ba Zesh Yomav Kimea Eitz, whose days are as long as a tree, who Megin Al Doro Ke Eitz, and protects his generation like a tree. Referring to Eov specifically, exactly in Gematria, 1,550 altogether. Now, again, at the end of the day, let's say this is Eov. Moshe Rabbeinu is asking, is there somebody that we need to worry about over here? Somebody who's around that we have to worry about. Eov died right there as the Mirage Meraglim were walking through the land. He had died right there at that moment. The Meraglim didn't get it. They had no idea why everybody was going to a funeral all at once. And they thought that thousands of people had died at once. But really, the only person that died was Eov. He had passed away right there at that moment.
Well, that
and when he passed away, and he was the funeral that everybody was going to. And when they saw that, they didn't even know what to respond to Moshe Rabbeinu. He was asking, what's going on with Eov? Eov is a powerful person. If we go in, we're going to need a special skill. The same way that Moshe was afraid of Og. Later on, when they were fighting Og Melech HaBashan, he was afraid of him. Al Tiro, so said HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you don't have to be afraid. He was afraid of Eov and the tzidkus of such a man. What's going to be with such a person? He was honestly afraid of him. That's what he was asking about. Now, I guess HaShachar says, this is like an impossible task. Okay, if it's Eov, I get it. It's not an impossible task. But if it's not Eov, he's going around asking the people, I want you to go around and find an Adam Kusher. See if there are good people that are living in the land. The Meraglim were going to Eretz Yisrael for 40 days. 40 days. 40 days. And they're walking the entire time throughout the width and breadth of the land. And he tells them, I want you to see if there's good people living inside there. How in the world are you supposed to figure that out? How in the world are you going to find something? How do you even ask for something like that? Are there good people living here? Yeah, there are good people living here. Are they good enough they will protect you if we come and fight you? What are you supposed to ask? It's a crazy question to ask. And it's a crazy thing to look for. Why would he do that, Jake? Yeah. How do you know that? No, but how do you judge that? You know what I'm saying? You're judging? You just gave that example. You're asking for somebody who keeps the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. Typically speaking, most tzaddikim do not announce themselves as tzaddikim and be like, I'm the tzaddik, everyone. Just everybody look at me. I'm the tzaddik. So that means that you're looking for someone that's almost an impossibility to find. You're looking for a hermit who's sitting around and acting like a monk sitting in the middle of nowhere. This is almost impossible. Yeah, Yechiel.
One is, first of all, actions speak louder than words. So if they see their actions, like Eliezer with Rivka, then they can see someone who's good, and that's one.
So you're very, very good, but does that denote that that person that they see is the Adam Kasher?
Well, if they see his actions, and the other thing is, Hashem, you don't think Hashem gave any Ruach Kodesh or anything? These people were huge tzaddikim. They knew what, they knew that.
100%. There always could be Ruach HaKodesh involved. But listen to this answer, and the idea is from the Chassam Sofer. It's very close to what you just said. The Chassam Sofer asked this question as well in his drashos. He says, how in the world are they supposed to find this guy? And number two, he asks, why a tree and not a sun? Tzaddikim are like the sun. Go see if the sun is in the land. Go see if there's a shield in the land. Ask for something else. Why a tree? So he says the following. The Chassam Sofer says, isn't it brilliant? A tree is constantly growing. It is always going up and up and up. It takes its roots in the ground, and it goes straight up, and the branches branch out everywhere. A tree is something that it gets larger and larger. Not like a tent, not like a rock. A tent and a rock, they stay stagnant and it's there on top of you, and that's all it is. But a tree is constantly getting bigger and bigger, and the shade gets larger and larger. The idea behind a tzaddik is we don't want something stagnant. Like, the sun is never getting any bigger, it's never getting any smaller. I know after millions of years it'll get that. A tent is going to be the way that it is. I'm not asking for that, said Moshe Rabbeinu, because that type of a guy will destroy when we get to Eretz Yisrael. That's not a guy I'm worried about. I'm worried about a tree. What am I worried about? I'm worried about a tzaddik who's so great that he's constantly growing and he's constantly getting more people under his shade, constantly taking more people in to learn from them to become better people. That's what I'm worried about, because that type of a person can protect everyone. He can hold everybody into his shade itself. Those are domimin, things that are totally silent, have nothing to do with anything. What I want to see is that there's somebody who is absolutely holy and humble, becoming greater and greater as you go around. And how do you find such a person? And here's where Yechiel's answer comes into play. You find such a person not by finding him, by finding students of his. Are there people who are constantly working at becoming better and better and greater and greater? If you see that, if you see people and you ask around and you say, are there any people that are in spiritual holy pursuits? And they say, oh, those people over there. You go up to them and say, do you guys have a master, a Rebbe, a teacher who's helping you along the way? And they say, yes. You're not going to find him. Who's going to lead you to that guy? But if you know it's there, then you have to worry. And the people did go by. The Meraglim did. And they asked. And there was no one on that caliber. There may have been suns. There may have been shields. There were protective tents. There were people that compared to those types of things, but no trees. There were no trees in Eretz Yisrael. And if there are no trees, you don't have to worry about anything whatsoever.
When they got there, why didn't they just ask if the yeshiva shame behavior or if
that's
you don't have a yeshiva?
Probably exactly it. And it's more than that. What's the end of the pasuk? V'yischazaktem, be strong when you ask. Ulakachtemi priya aretz. Take it from the fruit of the ground. Literally, that means take the fruit of the ground and bring it back with you, like the grapes, etc. But this means more than that. I want you to see from the fruit of these talmid, of these, the Rebbe. Find the tree's fruits, not referring to actual fruits, but to the people who are the fruit of that labor of the tzaddik. Are there people that are from that tree? Look for those people. And if you see them, then you'll know whether these people are great or not. It's a brilliant shot from the Psalm Sofer.
Like
not literally, meaning according to this shot, it's just a drush. It's all a medrash. And the medrash is saying, this is what I want you to see. I want you to see this, but not to literally take it back.
Probably instead of the grapes, if they just had like a person tied up to the like the post.
That would be disgusting.
Why? Then they were bringing back.
You wouldn't
the
be taking
person.
Stuff like that. But that's the idea behind it over here. That's the concept. Says the Psalm Sofer has another thing over here, but we don't need it. There's a Kliuk over here as well. I don't fully understand the Kliuk. You can look it up yourself. He says that God's name is in the land itself. I don't quite get it, and I'm going to skip it out when it comes to that. Now, Targum Yonasan and Sforno say the point of taking the fruits literally was not just Stam to show the fruits to the people outside of Eretz Yisrael, but rather to make a chazaka. A chazaka is a form of ownership, a kinyan, a way of acquisition, in which for me to take ownership of something, I need to do something in order to make that happen. For example, when selling a house, you give over a key to somebody else. Somebody picks up the key or opens up the door, shows that he's the owner of the house more than anything else, fixes something or does something in the ground itself. Taking the fruit, says the Sforno and Targum Yonasan, was the form of the chazaka. How does that show? Maybe you're stealing the fruits. It's because they were acting like they owned the place. They were walking around with a huge grapevine on their backs, all eight of them. Eight of them rocked them, one carrying a fig and one carrying something else, a pomegranate, but they were carrying the grapes with them, showing like they owned this place. And when they acted that way, that would be a chazaka, and they could say, we have already taken a hold of the land itself. Sofnas Paneach argues, this is, yeah, Ruth.
Did Moshe know that,
louder.
Did Moshe know that Hashem was going to make all the great queens and kings of Israel die?
No, I don't think he knew. This is not the only question. There were other questions as well. This is just one of the questions that he asked. So this is one question, Hayish Ba'itzimayim. But there were other questions, Hatova Aretz, what Habemachanim, or Mivtzarim. There were other questions. That's just one point, though. That's just one point. That's not that wasn't the whole point of the actual Meraglim themselves. Sofnas Paneach says that it's possible, based on Rambam and Hilchos Mechira, that since everyone knew they were coming, and spies weren't hiding whatsoever, it could be this is an actual chazaka, just taking a fruit from the land and saying, I'm going to keep this right there, even if you didn't act like you owned the place. But for sure, if they acted that way. Panine Kedem suggests another reason. If everybody knows Baba Basra, they took three different fruits to represent three different years of chazaka, a tremendous answer when it goes through. The Rashbam, the Chizkuni, Rav Chaim Paltiel, the Maharik, and the Ramban all say, Hayomim Yemei Bikuri Anavim. This was the time when the grapes were growing. And if it's the time when the grapes are growing, he says, if that's the time when grapes are absolutely growing, that means there were guards out, making sure that nobody would take. For them to go into the field and start grabbing fruits when there are guards everywhere, stopping everyone from going around, that shows they have strength. V'yischazaktem, said Moshe Rabbeinu. I want you to act strong, stronger than you normally do, and I want you to be somebody that you normally aren't. I want you to go in there and say, I'm going to take this no matter what. And when they argue with you, when they say, hey, get off my fruits, you're going to say, no, I have a command from God. I'm coming to take these fruits and I'm bringing them out. You can't tell me what to do. I want you to be strong and to do exactly that. Grab the fruit from them, show them you're not afraid of them, and then walk out. I don't care that they're giants. I don't care that they're huge. And this is a praise of the Meraglim. The Meraglim did it. Even though later on they said horrible things about the land, they did this. They were willing to go in, they were willing to grab the fruits away from somebody else, and they were willing to say, we're taking this fruit out. That's an amazing praise of them, that they were not afraid of the giants that were there, even though they knew And they were all around. Tzfaras Onos, Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz says that could even be a sign. If they're willing to let you go with those fruits and they don't say anything, they don't do anything at all, that's a sign that God is with you. If nothing happens to you and you get out without being unscathed, no worries about anything, you're going to be fine. Everything's going to be perfectly fine. An amazing idea. But the Malbim says the exact opposite. This is like the time when anybody could come in and carry out grapes because nobody cares because there's so many grapes in the field. So therefore, you don't have to worry about anything at all, and therefore, you don't have to worry about that. Maria Saad just says that they bought the fruit from the people of the land. I know it sounds like so strange. Ulekachtem. What does the word lokeach mean? A lokeach is a buyer. They bought the fruit from the people of the land. They weren't stealing. They weren't making a chazakah. They weren't doing anything crazy. They simply put, they bought the land. They bought the fruits from the land so they could bring it back without any problems whatsoever. That's the idea behind it. Now, we're going to skip a little bit. The Vilna Gaon says that the words v'hayyamim yamei bikuri anavim, the last letters, yamim is a mem, yamei is a yud, bikuri is a yud, anavim is a mem, 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 yud, yud, is the gematria of 100, which is the same gematria as sam. Now the satan, the one that goes against us, the malach amavis, has an angelic name. We call him the malach of death. Right, he's also known as the Satan, the adversary against all of us. That's the way that he's called. But he has an angelic name. The name is Samach Mem Aleph Lamed. Samachel. We don't say the full name. We're not supposed to say the name together. I don't know why exactly, but it's brought in the Taimim and Hagim that somebody who says it gives power over to that side, to the Sitra Achra. So we don't say the entire name. But Samach Mem Aleph Lamed is the name of that Malach. And Sam, Yamim Yamei Bikuri Anavim, this is hinting to, says the Vilna Gaon, that at this time of year, this is his time of year. The Satan is in charge. And this is really important because this Parsha of Parsha Shlach always falls out right before, right around the time of Chodesh Tammuz. Tammuz and then Av. And Tammuz and Av are 2 months of the summer where many people find it very difficult. Number one, in their Shmiras Einayim, in seeing things that they shouldn't be seeing. And number two, finding things to do that are kadosh as opposed to not. Because whether in yeshiva or not, whether you're in certain places or other, the summer is a time for batala, for people to just do other things. Summer is a time for people to just chill out, so to speak, and do anything they want to do. And obviously, people are dressed the way they shouldn't be in the summer. And because of that, it's hot. I do agree. Trust me, wearing the suit all day is not the greatest in the world. It's not like I'm walking around in a t-shirt and shorts yet, right? But I understand that. But this is the concept. This is the time. Yomim Yamei Bikuri Anavim is the time of the Sam. Pnei David brings down, according to the Gemara in Sota, Lamed Hay. It seems this grape cluster weighed 960 sa'ah. 960 sa'ah. 960 is a famous number. It's the number of Samkel, and his wife, so to speak, Lily. There's a wife, Lamed Yud Sa'ah. Them together, Samkel and Lily, put together the, I guess you can call it the combination of Tumah and destruction that they represent is exactly what we are worried about. V'hischazaktem, be strong, is the same gematria, 960. That what they represented, some even say that you shouldn't even end the first Aliyah with this pasuk because it ends on such a bad note. V'ayomim yamei bikuri anavim. Stop right there. It's like you're ending with the Satan's there. It's not stam that we have these great men in Klal Yisrael that you said before that they had Ruach HaKodesh in them. They had this Ruach HaKodesh. And these men sinned and they became the Meraglim and said horrible things about Eretz Yisrael. That's crazy. Why in the world is it that these people failed so miserably at their task? A task that was given to them by Moshe Rabbeinu himself when they're in the Midbar. How could they have failed so miserably? And the answer is, the Satan put everything out there against them. Everything you can think of, he threw everything at them and they didn't make it through. The Medrash Pliya says three crazy things over here. Number one, the reason the Meraglim weren't successful is because these days are the days when the grapes ripened. That's what he says. That's why. Because the grapes ripened on that day. Number two, he says, this is why Moshe Rabbeinu was hidden for 3 months. Moshe Rabbeinu was born and he's hidden for 3 months. This is why he was hidden for 3 months, he says. Obviously a very strange Medrash. Number three, this is why the word Anavim, grapes, are spelled without a yud. Anavim is spelled without a yud. That's three different ideas that the Medrash brings down. How do you understand it? There's a sefer called the Nitzutze Shimshon. You probably have heard me quote it before. Nitzutze Shimshon was by Rabbi Shimshon Me'Astropolia, a massive Kabbalist who died in the Kalmanicki massacres of Tach V'Tat. They say that his death was the final death that caused Tach V'Tat to end, that he was the final kapara for all of Klal Yisrael. He has some of the craziest Divrei Torah you have ever heard. And this is all stuff that other people write in his name. He never wrote a sefer. He never wanted to write anything down. He was a tremendous, tremendous Mekobel in every which way. That was a hidden tzaddik, so to speak, when it came down to it. Nitzutze Shimshon says, the Satan rules over 3 months. There are 3 months where the Satan grabbed a hold of them and said, these are my months. These are my months, and I'm taking them for myself. Tammuz, Av, and Teves. Teves in the middle of the winter. Tammuz, Av, and Teves. Moshe Rabbeinu was hidden for 3 months, because these 3 months are months which are so tameh and so filled with tumah. Moshe Rabbeinu had to remain hidden. He wasn't hidden for Tammuz, Av, and Teves. They're not even near each other. But it meant he had to hide for 3 months. There were 3 months where the Kiddusha of Moshe Rabbeinu, even the Kiddusha of Moshe Rabbeinu, could not combat the powers of these tumas, of these tumos that were out there in Tammuz, Av, and El. Meraglim left. The Meraglim left on the 29th of Sivan. That first day, they were still in Kadosh world, in Sivan world, and things were good. But the month after Sivan is Tammuz, and the month after Tammuz is Av, and we all know that the Meraglim were gone for 40 days. They came back on the day before Tisha B'Av. That night was Tisha B'Av. The next day, when they died, was the day of Tisha B'Av itself. It seems that that's the time when by far the Satan is the most powerful. And when he saw that these Meraglim were coming out there during these months, he specifically went against them and grabbed a hold of them. And even though they were Anashim, Kulam Anashim, great men, says Rashi, Ba'os Ashok Sherem Ayu. When they left in Sivan, there were good people. In Tammuz and Av, they got taken down. In Tammuz and Av, they lost everything. Everything was completely gone. Says in Nitzutze Shimshon, Bikure means before. The ripening means the letters before, so to speak. Hayamim yemei bikure anavim. These days are bikure anavim means these are the days when you look at the letters before anavim. The letter before ayin is a samach. The letter before a nun is a mem. The letter before the beis is an aleph. The letter before the mem is a lamed. The letters before Anavim, Ayin, Nun, Beis, Mem, are Samkel. The Satan was right there grabbing a hold of them because it was those days. And the Pasuk is hinting it to us, not just by the Sofe Tevis, the last letters of every word, but the actual word itself, Anavim, is being spelled that way. And that's the word Yemei. Yemei refers to this as well. 60 is the gematria of Yemei. There were 60 days of Tammuz and Av that were horrible days that referred to what the Sam was doing over here. Now, tremendous idea, right? Everything works out really well. That's absolutely crazy. Some say that this is the reason why non-Jews are so prone to being into Yayin Nesach, why we're so makbid on Yayin Nesach. Somebody just asked me about something. They made a pizza without looking at the organic tomato sauce that they had gotten. The organic tomato sauce had vinegar in it. Now, when you have vinegar in something, typically speaking, it all depends on where and when. Vinegar is quite often made from wine, which means that if you don't have a hechsher on it, it's probably Yayin Stam, not Yayin Nesach. We don't assume that non-Jews are libating wine to the Avodah Zarah nowadays, unless you go to, I guess, an Indian restaurant. You wouldn't have to worry about that, right? But normally, typically speaking, they don't do that. But it's Yayin Stam. Yayin Stam is an Isser Durabanan that you're not allowed to have. Because of that, the pizza that they made was all off. Forget about that. It's a question about what you're going to do with the pans, the oven. You just baked a pizza in an oven, open inside the oven itself. The pizza leaked onto the bottom of the oven. What do you do with all that? So that's a shiloh. You get into shilohs with that.
But it's boiled. So it's mavushal.
That's not boiled.
In the heat.
Broiled, maybe.
Boiled. I'm saying the heat.
Okay. They have to cook for Shabbos. You can deal with that maybe over 24 hours, and maybe after 24 hours. Shilohs, here you are trying to matra. I hear that. That's good. Right? But it's a problem. I'm sorry. Let's say it was corn. It's possible, right? You got to find out where the vinegar came from. Vinegar can come from three different sources, and usually in America, it's made from corn or soy, right? But you got to find out. You don't know, especially if it's organic. Who knows where it's coming from? I'm sorry?
Make the assumption it's corn.
You just made the assumption it's corn. I wouldn't make that assumption automatically. You got to find out. All vinegar is different. What do they say? It was organic something vinegar, organic balsamic vinegar. That's what
balsamic is wine.
Yeah,
wine.
Usually it's almost always.
White vinegar.
Yeah. So is that whatever? What can you do? Yeah. Yeah.
Let's say someone has a condo and they're renting a place to the goy that's cooking some non-kosher food in the oven. And so then they come back and they want to return back to the
Too off topic. Normally just kosher out the oven, wait 24 hours. That's it. Or kosher out the oven or wait 24 hours and then kosher, whatever it is. Usually that's what I would tell a person to do. Yeah, you can make it kosher again. Almost always. You got to make sure it's clean. But in those cases. But either way, and maybe that's the reason why, because Sam is connected to an oven. You guys all remember the Medrash? There's a Medrash by Noach that when Noach got off the Teva, right, he planted grapes. That was the very first thing he did. You all know the famous Medrash that the Sultan came to him and said, I want to make a deal with you. I'll plant the vineyard with you, right? But then he sacrificed a monkey, a pig, a lion, and a lamb, right? The lamb first and whatever it is. And he said, that's what happens to a person who gets drunk because the Anavim are connected to the Sultan and Sam. When a person drinks, the first thing that happens, they're calm like a lion, like a lamb. Then afterward, they start roaring like a lion. Then afterward, if they drink a little bit more, they become like a monkey hanging from the ceiling. And then afterward, they're stewing in their own filth like a pig. That's what happens when a person drinks too much. And that's the idea. The Sultan is connected to Anavim. That's the connection between the two. They're all connected with each other. I think everybody understands that. There's no one here that could question that. Right? You just have to watch a person. Yeah, usually this is pretty much it. Chava did this. The first thing that the Nachash represents the Satan, the Malach HaMavis, convinced her to take the grapes, which some say was the first tree, that was the tree of the Eitz Hadas, and she squeezed it and turned it into wine and fed the drink of wine to other Marishon. That's what he did. He didn't eat the grapes. He knew he wasn't supposed to eat from the tree, but he had the drink that came from that tree. He was the first person to drink the wine, and that's what awakened him to everything that was there. That's the concept. All of this is the idea of what happens. It could even be, simply put, if the snake touched the tree, it's possible that the idea of Yayin Nesech, of a non-Jew touching the wine, comes from the snake touching the tree filled with the grapes and wine when Chava made it for other reasons. Maybe that's where it all came from. I mean, the concept of all of this, Bripri eats on grapes, yes, 100%. Yeah. Yeah, so it is that. And the Chidah itself, right? I mean, there is an opinion that says it's wheat. Even then, it's going to be really weird because how do you have a wheat tree, right? But regardless, it's that. It's just so crazy how you see the connection between the two. But here's the biggest problem. All sounds great. This is an amazing drasha. Anavim and Sam Kale, oh wow, it fits perfectly. But there's one massive issue here. You know the massive issue here? The word Anavim in the Pasuk is spelled Ayin Nun Beis Yud Mem. There's a Yud in there. The Nitzutzei Shemshin is totally ignoring the Yud. There's a Yud in there. What are you going to do with that? I mean, it's nice to have a word of Sam Kale and to say Samach Mem Aleph Lam, but you got a test in there. It's like Samatiel. Like, it just doesn't work that way. How did the Nitzutzei Shemshin ignore the Yud? And if you say, well, maybe there are some Chumashim without a Yud. There are some issues that we have when it comes to Yuds and Vavs. Sometimes, there's a famous Rebbe Kiva Eger in Shabbos, I think it's on Daf Nun Beis Nun Hei, where he brings down all the different places where Shas Darshan something and it seems like a letter is off, like an Aleph or a Vav or a Yud is a little bit off. There's a famous Rebbe Kiva Eger on that. But here, everyone agrees. In every single Sefer Torah, there is no question the word Anavim is spelled with a Yud. There is no second opinion. There's no possibility of something different. It's all spelled with a Yud. So what's going on? How in the world can Nitzutzei Shemshin make this big of a mistake over here? How could he do that? Now, there are some that explain that this is on purpose, and he clearly meant something. Let's try to understand what that means. The B'nai Yisachar, right, says in Tammuz Av, in Maimer Beis Os Yud, there is a ksiv and a kri throughout the Torah. There's a way that the pasuk is written and a way the pasuk is read. As we all know, nothing in the Sefer Torah has nekudos, which means it could be read in a different way than what you would think that it's read as. That's why it's so difficult to lane, right? Because you look at it and you think the word is telling you one thing and it's saying something else. And in fact, there are some words in the Torah that we don't even read. Yishgalena. In Kisavo, we don't read as Yishgalena, we read it as Yishkavna. We change the word. We read it out loud as Yishkavna. When the word is Yishkalena, it says it straight out because it's not a clean word. There's an obvious one. Yudke Vavke. How many times does Yudke Vavke appear throughout the entire Torah? And what do you say it as? Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. There is no one here that has ever heard the Sefer Torah being read as it's supposed to be written. Every single time, it's wrong. There should be a person who's looking in the Sefer Torah and saying, that's not what it's saying. But you're reading it out loud. Of course, we all know this, right? I mean, it's all read as Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud, as Adonai, right? When it's really Yudke, Vavke, and nobody makes a stink about that. Says the B'nai Yisachar, the whole Torah has a ksiv, a way that it's written, and a kri, a way that it's read. He says, here, We darshan the Torah. We darshan the Torah in our Olam Hazeh, the way we have it in front of us, according to how we read it. We go by how we read it. Certain things cannot be read the way they are written, but we'll darshan the way that we read it, and we make drushas based on that. But there is a Torah, so to speak, in Shemayim. There are no major differences between the Torah that we are reading as a Kri and the Torah that is being read b'ksiv. No real major differences between them, but there are differences. Some of those differences deal with a yud here or a yud there. Says the Bnei Yisachar, when you see the Gemara darshaning a word that does not appear the way that it does in our Sefer Torah, and it's not totally off, like the word ma'avirim, mem ayin beis, resh yud mem, says Tosus, because it says yud at the end of the word, it's plural, and that's why you can darshan it that way. The problem is, our Torah does not have a yud at the end of it. How could, Tosus says this, how could Tosus say that when there is no yud at the end of the word in our Sefer Torah? The answer is, because Tosus is looking at the way the word is being read, so to speak, versus the way the Torah is, the way that it's being written. There's two, so to speak, ways of darshaning the Torah. We barely understand Medrash in the first place and Drush in the first place. But there's another way of darshaning. The word Anavim is spelled with a yud, says the Bnei Yisachar. The word Anavim is straight out with an extra yud. But in the Torah Lemala, whatever that means, there is no yud. The way that it's supposed to be read, the way that it's supposed to be, is without a yud. And the way we're darshaning it is according to that Torah Lamala. So to speak, the Netut HaShimshin is dealing with a Torah that's out of this world, literally. It's not here. It's not something that we see. We're looking at the word and we're like, but it has a yud, but it has a yud. And he's saying that's not the way the Netut HaShimshin was looking at it. He's looking at something that's further up than that, something greater than that. Being Marami's hinting to something which is so great as if there's something different over there. Rav Wolfson goes on and says that that's why Tammuz and Av are such bad months for us now. But in the future, they're going to be days of Chagim. Tammuz and Av are going to be two of the biggest Chagim we have. Now, obviously, we have Pesach, we have Shavuos, we have Sukkot, we have these Chagim, we have Hanukkah, Purim. We can add those on. In the future, the biggest Chag is going to be on Tisha B'Av, the birthday of Mashiach. It's going to be a different day. Tisha B'Av is not going to be a morning day. It's going to be a day of Simcha, of ultimate Simcha, where everything, it's the greatest day. The greatest day is going to be the day that's so sad right now, because right now, it all seems one way. And in the future, it's going to be the exact opposite. It's going to be turned around completely. It's going to become the most awesome day, the biggest day of Simcha. The idea is that we're dealing with shells, so to speak, of garbage. We're missing out in the Kiddusha behind everything. We're looking at Tisha B'Av and we're saying, oh, there's nothing here. It's just a garbage-filled day. And that's exactly what the Meraglim were doing. They were looking at the land of Eretz Yisrael and seeing the shell of Eretz Yisrael, the physicality of the land. They're saying, it's not as great as everybody makes it out to be. If you look deep down and you see that ruchnius of the land, which is very difficult to see even for tzaddikim, when tzaddikim go in and they look deeper, you'll find there's a ruchnius to the land that you can't find anywhere else. They say avir de Eretz Yisrael mechakim, that the land, the airspace of Eretz Yisrael makes a person smarter. That's not a joke. It means that spiritually you become stronger. It doesn't mean you're going to find it an easier way to learn. It's not like all of a sudden you go to Eretz Yisrael, you're going to be like, I'm ready to learn forever. It doesn't mean you're going to go to the Kotel, you're going to put your hand near it, on it or near it, depending if you're a brisker or not, and automatically say, oh, I found my way to God. Of course not. We're blinded and we've got a lot of issues, and Lashon Hara is like tsaras. And if you ever spoke Lashon Hara, we're a little bit detached from that Kiddusha and we might not be able to see it. And even great, great tzaddikim might not see it. Even great tzaddikim might not see it. I remember going to Eretz Yisrael for the first time, going to the Kotel and thinking that it should be something different, like willing myself to feel something spiritually when I saw the Kotel for the first time. And I'm just like, it's a wall, it's great. And I know there's a lot of history here, but I'm not feeling anything. It took me a long time to appreciate spiritually what's going on in this land and feeling like there actually was something, like I am feeling smarter here. It doesn't come automatically. And this is what Rav Wolfson and the way that Bnei Yisachar is saying it. There's another with a yud where you look at it and you're like, I see a yud. I see a yud right here. I can't get rid of that yud, and therefore I don't have a drasha here. The Netut HaShimshin must be wrong. And there's a way of looking at the Torah and seeing that there's no yud. So to speak, as if to see the Torah from a spiritual aspect, as if there's no yud here, where you can see the remez of some kale. It's there right in front of your face. You just can't feel it. You can't feel it that way. It's a tremendous drasha, and I don't think I fully understand it, but I get the idea. I totally get the concept, the essence of what the idea is trying to say. Whether or not I can fully appreciate it, I think it's going to take me a while, but the idea behind it is 100%. I get the concept behind it. I'm going to go with one last thing. We're going to stop with this. The Arizal says there is a mitzvah of bikurim, bringing the first fruits, bringing those first fruits to the Beis HaMikdash. The Arizal says that mitzvah of bikurim, which unfortunately we no longer have today, you brought it to the Beis HaMikdash, you brought it over there. He says that mitzvah was a tikkun for what the Meraglim did. They went in on days where there were Yemei Bikurei Anavim, the days when they were bringing Bikurim, and they should have brought the Bikurim in a proper fashion to the Mishkan, placed them down in front of Moshe Rabbeinu, and brought the very first mitzvah Bikurim. They should have brought them down and said, look at the Holy Land, look at all the great things we have over here, and they didn't. Says the Arizal, Bikurim from that point on was a tikkun for the sins of the Meraglim themselves. Kmini Kadim says, that's why the Mishnah in Bikurim and Perek Gimel Mishnah Aleph says, three fruits are brought for Bikurim. It doesn't give any other examples. There are obviously, it applies for all the five fruits of the Shevaminim. But he says grapes, pomegranates, and figs. Because those were the three fruits that the Meraglim took outside. The Chiddush HaRim says that this was exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu's intention was in the first place. This was his kavana. He planned in the Meraglim seeing these beautiful fruits, bring them back, and be Mekadesh Shem Shamayim by showing everyone how awesome the land is. And it would be a huge Kiddush Hashem, and they would just walk right inside. Everything would be perfectly fine, but it didn't happen. So every year, at the beginning of these fruits, the Yemei Bikurei Anavim, we try to reenact what it's like. Reenact by taking the fruits and bringing them to the Beis HaMikdash and saying, God, we should have deserved this in the first place. We didn't do it right the first time. Let's do it right the second time. Let's do it right this time around. And for us to take out of it, to think that in these months, these days, when things are difficult, and it's Tammuz and Av, and it's hot outside, and it's difficult not to look in certain places, it's difficult not to act in certain ways, it's difficult to be the people that we know we have to be, but life gets in the way. At these times, when it's really, really hard to be around, this is the time when we make our own, so to speak, our separate gift of Bikurim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We give something up, our best fruits, the first thing that we have, and we give it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm giving this to you. I'm not going to be able to do it all the time. I'm not going to be able to do everything, but I'm going to guarantee one thing. I'm going to take on myself one thing. That mitzvah is there, says the Arizal, for us to do, for us to take on, and to really bring something out of, so that we can be Mekadesh Shem Shamayim, the way that unfortunately the Meraglim didn't. So we talked about the eights, why specifically trees. We talked about the Adam Kusher that the trees represented. We talked about grapes themselves as well as the Satan and his job during these times and how we can understand that drush, considering that the word is spelled differently, what it all means. We should take it for ourselves and try to improve and become better because of it. Have a great Shabbos, guys.